Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, JP Ajahn-Paz from the Two Man Power Trip. And of course, joining me is the star of the show, the former ECW and WCW World Tag Team Champion, former world champion of NWA Florida. He's one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of professional wrestling, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, John. How are you?
I'm doing okay. So as far as today's topic, I want to talk about Halloween Havoc all the way back in 1994, held on October 23rd from Detroit, Michigan at the Joe Louis Arena. The attendance was about 14,000, and the tagline, "Witness the terrifying rage in the cage," the pay-per-view buys 220,000. Pretty good number there. Pretty good attendance for the main event of Hogan and Flair. Were you fully in charge and the head booker as of now, or is it still a committee here in Havoc 94?
It's still a committee.
So is Rick a part of that committee still?
Yeah, I believe so.
What did you think about Havoc in general? Because Bischoff says that was more of his big show, or that he thought of his big show, than Starrcade. And traditionally, Starrcade you would think is the biggest show, but he always said he thought Havoc was kind of your biggie. And doing a Hogan Flair retirement match at Havoc, and your Starrcade is Hogan against Beefcake, Havoc in 94 definitely takes precedence, no?
Yeah. I always thought Starrcade was WrestleMania.
Yeah, but Havoc here, it's like your big match, you know, the retirement match. This seems even bigger. Did you think about that? Like, you think, wow, Havoc is actually going to be bigger than Starrcade.
Well, I think there was some finagling going on that they were going to come out of that, even though Rick retired, he was going to come back and do something to be where Hogan forced him to unretire him. He was going to do something so diabolical to he was going to have to coax WCW into lifting the retirement of Ric Flair. That's what I remember.
With this Havoc just being, you know, absolutely huge show for you guys, booking-wise, did you think, like, okay, this is kind of booking us into a corner where we're going to lose Ric? Or what was your thoughts kind of just going into the pay-per-view, like, oh, man, we might lose Flair for a little bit?
Yeah, we knew we'd lose a little bit, but we thought, we pick up the big money on the pay-per-view. There's so many ideas just thrown around that we thought we'd pick it up on the other end. And Rick needed some time off.
Do you think that the retirement stipulation, that always draws?
Yeah, but in today's day and age, I don't think it works. How many guys actually really retire?
Well, yeah, it's true. Nowadays, yeah, you wouldn't even think twice about it.
Yeah.
But it's Hogan, it's Flair, it's the two biggest names of all time, pretty much. It's like, wow, one of these guys is going to retire. This is crazy.
Yeah. But, I mean, Terry Funk's had 32 retirement matches, I think. And even then, I don't think the people bought it all the way. Like you just said, the two biggest names, well, he's going to have to come back some way.
Yep, for sure. Was this the biggest money maker so far for WCW? Because Hogan's coming in, obviously Bash the Beast did well, but you know, you got 14,000 people in attendance, 220 on the pay-per-view buys, probably upwards of $2.5 million at least between attendance and pay-per-view revenue. Is this one of the biggest shows up until this point?
Absolutely. I think it was the biggest.
I would say it's probably neck and neck with Bash of the Beach, which is Hogan's first show, right? I mean, that's probably the two most successful. So Hogan coming in, you're probably thinking, like, this is nothing but a positive.
Right.
What would you say about Hogan? Like, whatever he's making in pay is definitely worth it at this point?
Yeah, and he got a huge percentage of pay-per-view, got a huge percentage of merchandise. He moved the needle every way for us. Put us on the map.
What's your relationship like with Hulk at this point?
Oh, good. Good. Very good. I had gone to see him play when he was a guitarist at the Rocket Lounge in Tampa when I was a really young boy. And I'd known him for a long time. went to Pensacola for a few days, and him and Brutus were living in a van on the beach, and I met them. They sent me from Florida. The Panhandle was a different territory in Florida. And they sent me there, and I met him there again. You know, he just started. I had a great relationship with him.
What was Rick's relationship like with Hulk? Because I know he helped bring Hulk in, but now he's kind of kowtowing a lot to Hulk.
I think Rick knew what was going to happen, and Rick did bring him in.
What did Rick say to you? Because you're a part of the booking committee, but wasn't it rumored that Hulk was going to win one, Rick wins one, then they have a third match?
He might have said that, but as Jim Barnett once told me, maybe that's what Rick heard.
Like, meaning that he heard that and not necessarily true?
Hogan could change the finish in the ring.
Is that something that bothered Rick?
I don't think so.
Did it bother you as one of the bookers? Like, he has got too much control?
No, because what he brought to the dance.
Did Flair ever kind of just not complain, but say like, hey, you know, Hulk, I need a win here. Hey, Kevin, let's get me a win here over the Hulkster? Or no, because it seems like he's all business.
Yeah, because Hulk had total creative control. You got to learn to pick your battles. And what was Rick going to do?
I always wondered, like, in his heart, if he would change anything, like, if he had the creative control. You know what I mean? Would he be the one saying, like, hey, I'm going to win this one and Hulk's losing this one? You know, like, I know it's hypothetical, but it's just always something I thought about.
Yeah, truthfully, I don't know unless you're in that guy's head.
Because I know now Hogan and Rick are good buddies, but, you know, then in the thick of things, you don't want to give up that spot. I mean, Hogan's going to be the top guy no matter where he is.
Right. And who knows? Rick might have been called up to Ted's office, and Ted put Rick over and said, you know, you're very important here. I don't know, but I would assume if there was any flack from Rick, Barnett would have set that up.
So as we start the pay-per-view itself, we have a dark match, a main event match. Booker T with Stevie Ray defeats Brian Armstrong.
I put him on the card. One of the brothers was sick, and I said, borrow some boots and tights and go out there and work. He's an Armstrong. They know how to wrestle.
Who is T. Graham Brown? He was the guy that sung the national anthem. I never heard of him before.
I never did either.
Shouldn't you get somebody that's like semi-famous?
You would think you should.
Now, as far as the first match of the card, Johnny B. Badd defends his WCW Television Championship against Honky Tonk Man, and it goes to a time limit draw, 10 minutes. What are you thinking here? Honky and Johnny B. Badd going to a 10-minute time limit draw for the TV title.
That was Hogan's finish.
So he had creative control not only for his matches, but for other matches as well?
Yeah, he could tell you what he wanted to do with his friends.
What did you think about that?
If a guy is given the freedom from a company, I got no feelings whatsoever, because it ain't my job to question the guy that writes the paycheck.
What did you think about Honky Tonk?
Honky Tonk and I were tag team partners years prior to that. I thought they could have worked a good angle, but Honky had that attitude that he was the greatest intercontinental champion and didn't want to lose to Johnny.
As the booker, you know, part of the booking committee, that kind of creates a problem, though. I mean, right? I mean, the guy's not going to do what you ask, and I mean, that doesn't come off very well.
No.
Because it's interesting here. I mean, you're keeping Honky strong, but you're not able to build up Be Bad by going over on Honky, and he wants no part of it.
They had a different attitude back then, guys from the WWE.
They looked at us like the minor league.
That match, I mean, let's be honest, it was not that great. Johnny Be Bad against Honky Tonk Man, for some reason, just didn't work. They didn't seem like they had good chemistry together. But the next match is a complete opposite. It's great. The pretty wonderful team of Paul Orndorff and Paul Roma defeat Stars and Stripes, which is obviously the Patriot Del Wilkes and Marcus Alexander Bagwell. Match goes about 14 minutes, and Pretty Wonderful gets the win here, and they win the tag team titles. You want to say like underappreciated, underrated, but I feel like Pretty Wonderful was pretty great. Orndorff and Roma, I always liked that team.
I work with them a lot. I thought they were very, very good. Paul Orndorff was one of the greatest heels ever in the history of the business.
Definitely. And Roma gets a lot of shit, but he was pretty good.
He was good. He was very good.
And Stars and Stripes, no slouches either. I mean, Bagwell, especially at this point, it was great for what he was. And the Patriot is one of those guys that often gets overlooked, but he was pretty good. And obviously, he had that great, great body and a great look.
Right. He was a very nice guy, too.
Good chemistry. So it's interesting, like, okay, you know, you go from that pretty bad opener to that match. It's okay, maybe we're rocking and rolling here. But then we get your match. Then we get Evad Sullivan versus you, and Dave Sullivan ends up beating you by count out in about 5 minutes. What do you think here? A little bit of rough? Is it because of the gimmick? I mean, that kind of held you back a bit.
Yeah, it was another way to get Hogan over.
He wanted me to take Bobby Heenan's spot in ending Hulkamania.
Dave's a hell of a guy, wonderful person. They should have kept him as the equalizer. He could have drawn a lot of money.
It's just one of those things, like, what is he supposed to be? I mean, it almost seems like, you know, he's got a little bit of, like, mental issues, but he's got this bunny, but then he's obsessed with Hogan. He's his Hulkamaniac, number one fan. Like, how would you explain the gimmick? It is so, like you said, it's not very PC nowadays. It would be vehemently against it.
Did you ever read The Book of Mice and Men? He was Lenny.
100%, yes. That's a good point. I never even thought about that, really. Yeah, you're right. It's pretty much that same type of character.
And I guess you're the brother that's going to take him behind the barn?
Right.
Did you mind doing this angle? Because, like you said, it's very cartoony.
Very not like me, but I decided to do a job.
The next matchup is Dustin Rhodes defeating Arn Anderson with Colonel Rob Parker and Ming in about 10 minutes. Good match there. You know, as we know the story here, Arn pretends to be Dustin's partner at one point against Bunkhouse Buck and Terry Funk. He turns on him. But this is kind of the culmination of a one-on-one match between Dustin finally kind of giving Arn his comeuppance here. What do you think about Dustin at this point and Double A?
Double A is one of the greatest performers and talkers of all time. And Dustin is Dusty's son, and to me, he's fabulous.
Good, solid match from these two. I mean, you probably expect nothing less.
Arn could have a good match with a rhinoceros.
So with this one, it's interesting because Arn tries to cheat. Randy Anderson catches him, breaks the count. Rhodes kind of uses that distraction by the ref to roll him up and record the victory there. After the match, Arn Anderson was pretty frustrated. He attacks Dustin from behind and gives him the DDT afterwards. So it's almost leaving that door open or leaving that feud open, right? When the guy gets beat up afterwards, kind of maintains his heat or keeps his heat.
Right, right.
What's the booking philosophy behind that? It's like, okay, you're going to lose, but in the end, you're going to end up prevailing because you're going to beat the guy up after the match?
Yeah, heels going to get beat every night of the week as long as they get the heat back. It keeps the never-ending story going. Once you beat your heel in the middle of the ring, it's over.
So we kind of have a little bit of an interesting story with Hogan and Flair backstage-wise because you go back there, Mean Gene is in the back with Brother Brudai and Jimmy Hart and Hulk. But there's always this man in the costume, in the black suit, that attacked Hogan. At one point, it was Arn Anderson, but then there's another guy attacking Hogan and enabled Flair to defeat Hogan at Clash of Champions in August by countout. But fast forward, we never really found out the other identity. So that's one of the things, too. Are you teasing it here with Brother Brudai being so close to Hogan and them doing interviews together?
Yeah.
And you know, Mr. T, of course, Hogan's good buddy, is going to be the special guest referee in the main event. Mean Gene brings up a point backstage that Mr. T has been seen with Ric Flair lately. Can we be sure that we can even trust Mr. T? What is that? Just basically teasing the fact that T could possibly help Flair win and Hogan may lose?
Yeah, yeah. You know, this was laid up by Hogan and Flair, probably. Not probably. It was laid up by them. And just throwing that little bit of a swerve in, maybe they thought would help.
The next matchup, Hacksaw Jim Duggan defeats Stunning Steve Austin by disqualification to retain the WCW United States Championship. Match goes about 8 minutes or so. What do you think here, Duggan, who at the last show at Fall Brawl beat Steve Austin about 35 seconds, which was nuts for the U.S. title, after Ricky Steamboat retires and said he couldn't wrestle due to injury. Bockwinkel sets up the match with Duggan and Austin. I guess first, whose crazy decision was it to have Duggan beat Steve Austin in 35 seconds at Fall Brawl?
Probably the committees. We'd like to have that one back.
Mistake?
Regret. I definitely regret it. You know, I heard Austin have a podcast where he said he never wrestled Hogan because he didn't trust him. Maybe this was the beginning of the non-trust issue. Hogan putting his guys over him.
100%, that's what it looks like. Duggan is his guy, so it definitely seems that way.
Yep.
35 seconds, he beat him, bing, bang, boom. It was a shock. Even back then, I'm like, whoa, what the hell?
Not a good finish. But they were coming up with the idea, well, it happened so quick.
What did you think here? I mean, did Duggan need the United States title?
No.
And I hate the over-the-top rope because that's what this was. Austin gets DQ'd because he throws Duggan over the top rope.
It was passé.
I hated it when I was a kid.
Austin gets DQ'd, but then Duggan comes back in the ring and runs him off with a 2x4. So, again, not making Austin look strong at all.
No.
So the next matchup, Big Van Vader with Harley Race defeats Ray Trailer, a.k.a. at this point the Guardian Angel, goes about 8 minutes. Vader defeats him via the Vader Bomb. These two always had good chemistry. What do you think here? Keep Vader strong?
Yeah, absolutely. He's a monster. And Ray was a great worker, one of the greatest big men. But from Big Boss Man to the Guardian Angel, there's something you lose. So that's why he's in that spot.
You know, it's interesting about the show in general. Sting is not on it, but he's in the crowd. And you got Muhammad Ali at the show. I mean, what was going on? Was Sting injured at this point? What, was that his eye issue? I'm trying to remember what was going on with the Sting, or did you guys have nothing for him?
Was that his knee or his eye? Or there was something wrong. There was something wrong. I can't remember what it was.
Remember, he had some eye issue at one point, too, in 94. But it was weird. That's like, wow, this is a huge card. I'm surprised Sting isn't on it. But he's hanging out with Muhammad Ali out there.
Yeah.
How'd you guys go about getting Muhammad Ali?
Ted gave a call and got him.
Not cheap, I'm guessing.
No, not at all.
So far, Vader, Guardian Angel, it might be the match of the night. Very good match.
Yeah, it was. It was great.
You know, this is such a big star-studded show. You guys also had Thomas Hitman Hearns there. I mean, it's pretty good.
We're in Detroit.
So the next match up, the Nasty Boys, Brian Knobbs and Jerry Sags, defeat Terry Funk and Bughouse Buck. And a crazy tag match goes about 8 minutes. Parker and Ming are out there for the stud stable. Pretty good match, though, for the most part. What do you think here?
A little bit of something for everybody.
And I think you remember this crazy finish, and it had to hurt like hell for either Sags or Funk's head, but the Nasty Boys get the win when Sags gives Funk a pal driver on a pumpkin.
Yeah.
Whose finish is that?
So I'm sure Terry came up with that finish.
Very cool, very funny, but then when you watch, you're like, ooh, that had to hurt. Oh, man, pumpkin? It completely smashed it. It's great.
Brother, when you're in the ring with the Nasty Boys and Terry Funk, it hurts. Not a walk in the park, that's for sure.
So in the ring, Mean Gene is standing with WWE President Bill Shaw, the EVP at this point, Eric Bischoff, and Muhammad Ali. They present him with a check from the Turner Broadcasting Group for his foundation. Bischoff also presents him with a nice plaque. Good segment here, just very heartwarming.
One of the only pictures I have in my wrestling career on my wall is Ali and me with our fists up against one another at that night. For a second, he was okay. He did that thing where he bit his teeth over his bottom lip. And brother, nobody in my life has ever impressed me as the aura of Muhammad Ali. Nobody in the world.
Pretty awesome to get him there. To present with the check is great, too. It just shows this is great stuff by WCW. Then we're going to cut to the main event of the evening. Shivani obviously picks the Hulkster. Bobby the Brain picks Flair. They treat it like this is the most important match, which it is. Two biggest stars of all time, period. Career versus career steel cage match. Hulk Hogan with Jimmy Hart defeats Ric Flair with Sensuous Sherry. About 20 minutes long. Mr. T is the special guest referee. What do you think here? I mean, this is a huge, huge thing. And Hogan is going to retire the Nature Boy.
Yeah. And they gave him an out to witness the T as the referee.
It's interesting because at one point, Sherry tries to climb the cage and Jimmy Hart pulls down her dress. So you see everything pretty much. I mean, that was a crazy spot. Crowd goes nuts for it. Sherry keeps trying to interfere. She's great. I mean, she's like one of the boys. You guys are beating her up and Hogan's throwing her around and stuff. And even Sting is attempting to kind of come in and get her to stop. So, I mean, she played a big role in this as well. But despite Flair handcuffing Mr. T at one point, but Hogan was still able to pick up the victory with the leg drop. Flair saying he had no problem taking the loss here?
No.
With this, too, after the match, Hogan was attacked by Mystery Man. So was Sting. Basically, they're saying that whoever this is been stalking him for months. Hogan unmasks eventually, and it's Brother Brudai. It's the Butcher. It's the Beefcake. It's Ed Leslie.
Booty Man.
The Booty Man, the Zodiac, the man with no name, the man with 10,000 gimmicks. So it's pretty shocking here. You immediately, though, go from the Flair feud to Beefcake because Flair loses, he retires, and boom, you're starting up another angle in the debuting Avalanche. Then eventually Sting ends up making the save, but what an ending here.
Yeah, worked pretty good.
Pretty shocking, though, that it was Beefcake.
Yeah, and it gave Bruce the chance to shine. That would be a hot thing to follow him and Rick in a retirement match. So you can't blame Brutus.
And I got to be honest, pretty good show overall, if you think about it. Pretty wonderful match is good. The Dustin Arn match is pretty good. Vader, Guardian Angel is good. The Nasty Boys against Funk and Buck is fun. And Hogan and Flair is great.
I do too.
What do you grade it?
One thumb up, one in the middle.
Yep. So let's head towards the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website tmptempire.com. And, of course, follow Kevin on Instagram at TaskmasterTalks. And head over to Pro Wrestling Tees, prowrestlingtees.com, and visit the Kevin Sullivan store. Kevin, what else you got going on?
The 21st, I'm going to be in L.A. at the PCW Ultra event. Then in later on in November, I'm going to be at the World Class Revolution event. So, I got an event in Florida at the end of November. And then I'm going to be in Montana at the end of October for 3 days. So I got a busy schedule.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
As always, Kevin, thank you everybody out there for listening. And thank you, Kevin. We'll see you right back here for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. See you next week, folks.